Wilson, and we have no legislator LFO update. So with that, we'll just kick right off and turn it back over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. If there's no follow-up questions from yesterday, I think we'd like to start today with Patrol Division. Also in the audience, we have some invited testimony, two sheriffs and a chief here today.
Very good.
So I'd like to introduce Captain Jerry Gregg of our Patrol Division.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Gerald Gregg, and I am the commander of the Patrol Services Division. you had the pleasure of hearing from my counterpart, Captain Hampton, and he had the pleasure of talking about cops and robbers, and I'll talk about key budget drivers and performance measures. So probably not nearly as entertaining or exciting, but I hope to provide you some useful information. The Patrol Division consists of 333 sworn positions and 48 professional staff positions, and those professional staff positions support the troopers who are engaged in law enforcement duties, and that's at existing budget level. The governor's recommended budget provides for 470 sworn officers, which is a restoration of 139 trooper positions and 66 professional staff. I'll move right into our key budget driver and workload trends. The first one that I'd like to speak to is calls for service.
Mr. Chair, this is on page 13 of your under
behind
the patrol.
The patrol.
We're
on top of it.
Okay. The calls for service, as far as I'm concerned, are the very reasons that we need state troopers out on our patrolling highways of Oregon, to provide the desperately needed emergency services to the citizens and visitors of Oregon. The department received over 208,000 calls for service in 2006. Unfortunately, the state police does not currently provide around-the-clock coverage anywhere in the state. On any given day, it's very likely that there will not be a state trooper on duty anywhere between the hours of 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. And in many cases, some of the smaller offices, our patrol coverage will have shut down even earlier on any given day. As a result of the inadequate staffing of in the area of troopers, we were not able to respond to 26,000 of those calls for service we received in 2008. 22,500 of those calls were calls which would have warranted an immediate response, and by that I mean driving complaints, high-speed drivers, aggressive drivers, drug and alcohol-impaired drivers, traffic crashes, and so on. We lack a visible and proactive presence on the highways of Oregon, and our response times to the calls for service that we are responding to is frequently unacceptable. Our calls for service are influenced by a number of factors. Some of those factors are the obligations and expectations of the patrol division in support of our public safety partners, particularly in life-threatening emergency situations, and our cooperative policing agreements in each county. Another factor that influences and drives our calls for service is the demographics, which I would tell you would include population, the volume of traffic, number of licensed drivers and registered vehicles in any particular area. Another factor influencing our calls for service is environmental factors such as extreme weather conditions, a severe snowstorm, flooding can increase the calls for service and require us to shift resources from one area to another. A very significant influence on our calls for service is vehicle crashes, both non-injury, injury, and fatal crashes, as well as poor driving behavior, which would include high-speed driving, aggressive driving, and drug and alcohol-impaired drivers. Another factor that influences our calls for service is significant events that require our response with the SWAT team, with our mobile response team, or any significant event in the community that would require us to shift resources from one area to another to support our law enforcement partners. And then finally, highway construction projects and safety corridor designations would also influence our calls for service.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Gregg. Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Gregg, looking at your numbers, 12.5% of your calls go unanswered, regardless of the type of calls they are. Do you have a sense for what that number would be like if you had the 140 additional troopers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, if we had the additional troopers that were in the governor's recommended budget, I believe we would be able to answer most of our calls for service. I think that there would be an unusual situation where we wouldn't have somebody to respond, or we wouldn't be able to get somebody shifted from one area to another or call them out to respond.
Thank you.
Please continue, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Oregon State Police is part of a public safety system in Oregon, and our staffing level has not permitted us to provide the proper level of service to the citizens of Oregon or our public safety partners. We have a clearly identified need for around-the-clock coverage so that we can meet our commitments. This will require, as you well know, a substantial investment in personnel and equipment in order to accomplish our objectives. The next budget driver I'd like to speak to is lack of infrastructure. The Patrol Division lacks several critical infrastructure positions that have resulted in troopers spending their valuable time performing duties other than their primary law enforcement duties. These positions that are badly needed are the additional evidence techs, trades maintenance workers who maintain our vehicles and equipment, and office specialists who perform a variety of administrative functions in support of our troopers. The next budget driver I'd like to speak to is aging and absent technology. The Patrol Division has critical technology deficiencies, putting us well outside of the industry standards.
Excuse me. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, before you get out of the infrastructure, yesterday we heard testimony that it was likely with the new vehicle purchases that we might get closer to a one-to-one ratio for officer to their own vehicle, so those vehicles weren't out multi-shifted. Talk to us about why you cannot use contracted services for maintenance if you have enough vehicles that they're a shift off and have time to go get maintenance versus trades maintenance folks hired in the agency.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, in most cases, we do use the services of a local vendor for maintenance. But what we have is we have these employees that are actually referred to as labor maintenance coordinators, and they monitor the conditions of the vehicle. They'll inspect them. They'll receive input from the trooper who says, I've got something going on with my car. They'll take it in for service to the shop. In most cases, we don't have a mechanic shop, a bay, for example, and a lift where they do it themselves. But what they're doing is they're making sure that all the services performed consistent with manufacturer's rec and recommendations and safety concerns, recalls, working with the local shops and so on.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those kind of folks, and I'm sorry I forget the exact name of the title of that job, but how many vehicles can that person manage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, the labor maintenance coordinator at the Portland Patrol Office handles a fleet of probably 30 patrol cars, probably 10 fish and wildlife pickups, some boats, some motorcycles, any number of different vehicles. And Astoria, for example, is the same way. They don't just take care of the individual there doesn't just take care of the patrol cars. He takes care of the patrol cars, the fish and wildlife pickups, the boats, the all-terrain vehicles for fish and wildlife use if they have them, and so on. So, for example, Astoria, he also provides support to St. Helens, which does not have a labor maintenance coordinator, and Tillamook if they need his assistance. So we're shifting those resources around to make better use of them and spread them further.
One more follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The policy option packages that are mentioned in the infrastructure piece are 101 and 208, and I don't see, unless I'm missing it, the labor maintenance coordinator positions asked for within those two. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, no, and maybe our document is, they're actually, the term in the document is trades maintenance worker. And there'd be five trades maintenance workers in 101, and there are, 208 is the other one. and 4 trace maintenance workers in 208, representing Hannah.
Thank you, and I'm going to let this go. I'm sorry, but I would like to further understand the detail about, and I understand the variety of vehicles they would take care of, but maybe you could just provide the professional staff the number of vehicles these folks are to be responsible for. How many are currently in that type of position and the vehicles they care for? By adding 9, what the numbers look like to justify what we're looking at here?
And, well, maybe if I could follow that line of thinking, too, where they would, you know, maybe a state overlay where we don't have the trades maintenance workers, because I know in several shops you don't have any at all, where the new ones would be going and assigned to. Please continue.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll continue with that.
Ancient technology.
Okay. The Patrol Division, as I said, has critical technology deficiencies that put us well outside of the industry standards. For example, only about half of our vehicles have video recording equipment, and those vehicles, all but a very few, are utilizing old technology, VHS format, a VHS recorder, and the life expectancy of those units is 5 years, and every one of them is well beyond 5 years. We're plagued with problems with the equipment and them breaking down. We only have 20 mobile data terminals that are in use. These are the laptop computers that you'll see in most police and cars and emergency response vehicles. All 20 of those are on loan to us from another agency, who have obtained those through a federal grant for interoperability, and that's why we have them in our cars, because we're able to communicate and share calls with our partner agencies. Our radio system is aged and becoming less reliable. This will be discussed in much greater detail during the presentation by Mr. David Yandel when he provides you information about the department's wireless communication group, so I'll just mention that here. The next budget driver I'd like to speak to is drug trafficking on Oregon highways. Drug trafficking and criminal activity occurs on a daily basis on the highways of Oregon. Interstate 5 and Highway 97 corridors are regularly used to smuggle large amounts of methamphetamine in hidden compartments. This is generally northbound, and it's supplied by organized crime groups which are operating from and based in Mexico. We've also seen a very large increase in the amount of Canadian marijuana, which is referred to as BC Bud, and ecstasy being smuggled southbound on the corridors. Oregon State and Interstate Highways continue to be major arterials for the movements of these illegal narcotics and the cash proceeds of the illegal drug trade. In fact, the I-5 corridor has been declared as one of the top 5 drug corridors in the United States by the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration.
The I-5 corridor in Oregon, or just...
In Oregon, yes, Mr. Chair. The department is aggressively combating this criminal activity with our Criminal Apprehension Through Patrol Enforcement Program, what we refer to as CAPE. Our troopers that have interdicted large quantities of narcotics and cash have obtained during the course of their investigation information from the drug traffickers that would indicate that they attempt to travel through the state of Oregon between the hours of 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. because they know there are no state troopers on duty anywhere in Oregon, and they hope to be able to slip through undetected. Addendum A under the patrol tab is a summary report of our activity in the area of the CAPE, criminal apprehension through patrol enforcement, for the 2006 calendar year. I want to emphasize that there's a lot of attention and information that's being circulated due to the meth epidemic, but I want to emphasize that really what CAPE is training and reinforcing to our troopers to be looking beyond the reason for the traffic stop on each and every traffic stop, and to look for any criminal activity, whether it be illegal narcotics, the cash proceeds from the illegal drug trade, illegal weapons, fugitives wanted by the criminal justice system, and so on. Every traffic stop is a potential criminal interdiction.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
Meth is probably one of my top, it is my top priority, as most of you know. And I, how many new troopers will be on the I-5 corridor if we're successful in increasing and getting the 139? And in addition, how many of the canine units do you have that are on the I-5 or 97? Because I understand that the canines are also used, and they're very good at being able to detect drugs when they exist. Also to help give us probability for cause to search.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, under the governor's recommended budget and the proposal to add 139 troopers, 68 of those troopers would be on the I-5 corridor. The current configuration of our patrol canines at this time is we have one in Central Point, one in Springfield, one in Salem, one in the Dalles, and one on in Pendleton. So we're trying to cover the north-south corridor, both on I-5 and 97.
Any follow-up? I know that a superintendent stated yesterday that there is a difficulty in, because everybody wants canines. Are we planning to increase the canine number, even though there is that difficulty out there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, as recently as yesterday, I had a conversation with our station commander at Coos Bay. He is in contact with a number of groups on the South Coast who would like to provide some funding for an additional canine. And if that should materialize, we have a potential canine identified. We're all the time looking, Senator.
And follow up, because you mentioned 97 and I-5, and perhaps the cartels haven't discovered 101 yet. But my suspicion is if they're looking for a way to get from down south to north, that that would be another corridor that they may look at. And are you in planning or in looking ahead? Are you looking at any special training or interdiction or along that line?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we will continue to reinforce and train and update the training of the troopers on criminal interdiction. If the funding for the additional canine comes through, our intent is to place that dog on the coast with the handler. The Central Point dog, of course, can cross over the pass and work 97, as can the Springfield or the Salem dog, and the Dalles and Pendleton have got that corridor up into the Tri-Cities covered. So.
Because Salem has a huge problem, I really would like to see several dogs in Salem. To be honest with you, we know we've become like the crossroads for some reason in Marion County, and we place, you know, some intensive efforts here and you're part of that with all law enforcement in order to try to reduce the number of individuals who are involved with not only selling but manufacturing and delivering drugs. So
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we do work closely with our partner agencies who have canines, and in fact, if we can work this out, the new dog that we would obtain would be trained in cooperation with Sheriff Brown and Douglas County on some canines he's obtaining, and we're looking at strategically placing those to share resources with our partner agencies.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next budget driver I'd like to speak to is partnerships and cooperative policing efforts. The Oregon State Police Patrol Division is part of a greater public safety system in Oregon. As the resources of the Department of Crime declined over the past 20 years, so has our ability to provide the much-needed public safety services to the citizens of Oregon. For the Patrol Division, this is most readily apparent in the lack of a visible patrol presence by state troopers on our highways and our inability to provide adequate transportation safety services on the state highway system. This places a strain on our other law enforcement agencies who respond to emergency calls for service in our area of responsibility when we are unable to do so. By the same token, when the resources of our partner law enforcement agencies are reduced, we are called upon to assist them in providing emergency services to the public and our resources are in like manner strained. Examples of this are high-risk search warrants by our SWAT team, civil disturbances that require the services of our mobile response team, or significant events that require additional troopers in a particular area. These situations require us to shift resources from one area to another to respond to the frequently changing demands of the public safety system. I'd like to speak now to continuous improvements and efficiencies. The first one I'd like to speak to is a data mining project that the department has underway. The department, thanks to a $712,000 grant from the Office of Homeland Security, has embarked on a data mining project. What this involves is a full implementation of a records management system, which is integrated with the department's computer-aided dispatch system. It will allow for the improved cataloging of investigative information and calls for service and consolidation of the current databases. It will make all of the data much more readily available to the members of the department and our public safety partners, which will enable them to query the department databases for investigative information. Essentially, what that means is we have a computer-aided dispatch system in the dispatch centers. We would take an old records management system that doesn't allow our troopers or our partners to query the data on who we've arrested and had contact with, and we would have those two systems talking to one another, and we would open up our databases to outside agencies through a computer link. The other improvement in efficiency I'd like to speak to is evidence technicians. The restoration of 10 evidence technicians by the January 2006 e-board has greatly improved our evidence management, both in terms of efficiency and quality. As mentioned by Captain Hampton yesterday, the evidence techs have disposed of over 10,000 items of evidence that are no longer needed. Furthermore, thousands of hours of time and effort by sworn staff have been returned to law enforcement duties. Further investment in the evidence techs, like our trades maintenance workers who maintain our vehicles and equipment, will improve our efficiency and restore additional sworn hours to law enforcement duties. I'd like to move on to performance and outcome measures now. The patrol division measures performance and outcome by three...
Captain Gregg?
Yes.
I'm just going to say it's a good thing when we're not asking questions, but Representative Nathanson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we get too far away from it, and you may already have something here in your performance measures that you're getting ready to talk about, but as I think about the numbers that and reflect on what you've just explained on aging and absent technology and drug trafficking on the highways, when I look at 2004, 05, and 06, how many ounces were seized? That's a huge increase. Is there a way that you could just sort of repeat for me so I absorb it? How much of it is due to, on any one stop, you may be seizing more per stop versus how much of that increase is due to more seizures in the number of events? That makes sense?
It does, and I guess, Mr. Chair and Representative Nathanson, I'll try to answer the question like this. We are reinforcing and continuing to encourage our troopers to look beyond the reason for the stop on each and every time that they stop a car. And every stop is a potential interdiction of some sort of criminal activity. But it's very apparent to us that the frequency in which we're likely to find it is increased. So it's really both things. There as Senator Winters mentioned, there is a meth epidemic,
yeah.
And we recognize that, and we are working very hard to curb that and remove that from the streets on every stop.
Rather than, for example, 100 ounces on five different stops.
No,
that's
I do not.
That's another way to interpret it.
Right, I do not think that's the situation. That's not what's pushing that data up.
Thank you.
It's every day, every week, when I review the weekly activities, there's stop after stop is some quantity of criminal activity.
Thank you.
The Patrol Division measures performance and outcomes by three formally adopted performance measures. I'll go through those first. Performance number one is the number of traffic crashes per 1 million miles traveled on rural, state, and interstate highways. Performance number two is the number of fatal traffic crashes per 100 million miles traveled on rural, state, and interstate highways. And then performance measure three is the percentage of arrests versus total reported crimes on rural, state, and interstate highways. The first two performance measures are measuring the crash rate and the fatal crash rate on the rural, state, and interstate highways for which the Oregon State Police has a primary responsibility for providing law enforcement efforts. These are both national standards of measurement for crash rates on our highways, and they're widely used by other police agencies across the country. The first performance measure, the goal for 2004 and 2005 were 0.52 and 0.50 traffic crashes per 1 million miles traveled. The actual crash rates on Oregon's rural, state, and interstate highways were 0.54 and 0.61, respectively. As for the second performance measures, the goals for 2004 and 2005 were 1.60 fatal crashes per 100 million miles traveled for both years. The actual fatal crash rates were 1.91 and 1.88, respectively. Oregon does slightly better than the national average as it relates to the fatal crash rates. However, we fall well below Washington State, which is a light comparator in the area of fatal crash rates. And more detailed information is contained in Addendum B under the Patrol tab of the information you were provided.
Page 39 in your notebook.
So let me try to explain to you, from my perspective, what that really means. The five-year average for fatalities in Oregon is 476 people killed on our highways each year. In 2006, there were 478 people who died as a result of fatal traffic crashes in Oregon. We believe this is unacceptable. What that means is there's nearly 500 families who suffer tremendous loss and pain each year when a family member is killed on Oregon's highways. Approximately 57% of those fatalities occur within the Oregon State Police area of responsibility. I believe we can do better. With increased staffing, we can work to make an impact on transportation safety and reduce the number of people killed each year on Oregon's highways. The Oregon State Police did not meet our performance goals for 2004 and 2005. One major factor that may explain the variance, and I believe it does, between the targets and the actual data is a significant reduction in sworn troopers patrolling Oregon's rural, state, and interstate highways. This reduced our ability to respond to calls for service and to provide proactive law enforcement action for driving behavior, which we know to be causal factors in vehicle crashes which result in injuries and death. The motoring public on the highways, the rural highways of Oregon, does not at this particular time have an expectation that they're going to see a trooper who will hold them responsible for errant driving. There just isn't an expectation of seeing a patrol car out there. Performance measure number three is the number of arrests that were made versus the crimes reported to the Oregon State Police.
Captain Gregg?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So if you do just some, I'm doing some real back-of-the-envelope extrapolation. So this is on the fatal crashes, page 39. So I'm just looking at the top line, number of fatal crashes per one. Oregon is 1.36 and Washington's 0.93. If we had real round numbers, 500 fatal crashes, that means that if we came up to Washington's, you know, and I agree with you, it's a very good comparator, Washington's trooper strength level, we could cut Oregon down to 0.93. Is that a fair? Are you with me so far?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I believe that if we can increase the trooper strength, that we can have an impact on bringing those fatal crashes down. And we do have an example where our staffing level declined dramatically out of our McMinnville Area Command, and the fatal crashes on Highway 18 increased significantly. And we restored staffing, and the fatal crashes have come back down, and they've stayed down because our staffing level has remained steady.
And I'm not diminishing your point at all, but you do, and maybe Representative Hannah's cranking more specific numbers. But I'm just doing that. So we do that, we would reduce, I mean, two ways to say this, we could reduce our fatal crashes by about 150 a year, or that 350 would still die.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And for me, people say, what is your goal? What is your objective for fatal crashes? It's zero. And although I recognize in our business that's not a realistic number, but I believe we can do better. And whether we could hit the reduction of 150, I would hope so, but I just don't know.
Well, and I appreciate your goal, but some of the people you deal with on a daily basis and some of the people we spend untold hundreds of millions of dollars on, we both know that isn't going to happen. So
I understand that.
Anyway, all right, I just wanted to make sure I was tracking that part. Representative Cameron's looking like he's actually thinking about asking a question.
No, I'm just listening.
A curious listen. Representative Hannah.
This is a curious question. Over the time period, I mean, shown in the graph on the fatality rates, I mean, we've had a consistent downward trend, and I'm going to just jump out there and guess part of that's vehicle safety and airbags and a lot of other things. But as we're comparing to Washington, you know, against the national number, we're a fair amount less than the national number. As compared to Washington, we're that much different. Where does Washington rank nationally on those comparative data points? I mean, are they in the top five or in the middle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, I don't have an immediate answer to that question, but I will get it for you to see where they rank as it relates to that.
Yeah.
And to the other comment you made, we do know that there have been significant improvements in vehicle safety with airbags, side curtain airbags, three-point restraint systems, vast improvements in emergency medical responses, both in technology and in response times, helicopters flying people to trauma centers that were never in existence before. There's a lot of people that are living as a result of serious crashes that are very severely injured and in many cases don't completely recover.
10 years ago, they would have been dead.
Exactly.
Yeah. One follow-up. Do you correlate this in terms of the traffic fatalities? Do you have a comparator for how many of those fatalities are related to drug and alcohol?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hannah, in the neighborhood of 40% of fatal crashes are drug and alcohol related.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson.
Is there any adjustment or comparison for differences in speed limits on different roads or from one state to another?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, NHTSA has absolute volumes of data as it relates to that can be interpreted a number of different ways. The question is, if we raise the speed limit in Oregon, would that result in more fatalities? I can try to get you an answer to that. I'm not sure I can answer it definitively. What we do know is that incremental speed increases result in more violent crashes. Much more significant energy is dispersed as a result of that crash, and that results in greater damage and potentially greater injury and death.
Thank you.
And finally, I'd just like to say on page 16, there is reference to the fact that these performance measures are linked to benchmarks, Oregon benchmarks number 41, 45, and 62, and those are detailed in the material provided. One thing the department will be doing is we will be reexamining and evaluating all of our performance measures to make sure that they are the most meaningful and appropriate measure of the investment in the Oregon State Police that we hope this legislative body will make. Furthermore, we will be developing secondary internal performance measures that to track our outcomes and progress towards our goals as a result of the positions being restored to the agency. I'll get into that in a little more detail later. I'd like to move into some discussion about policy option packages. Policy option package 101 is the first one I'll speak to. That policy option package restores the much-needed professional staff to support the current workload, given the level at which we're staffed in the trooper rank at this time and those folks engaged in law enforcement activities. This will make us more efficient and more effective. We currently have, as has been mentioned several times already to this committee, a misalignment of sworn troopers, sergeants, and lieutenants' time, and in the fact that they're performing, at least part of the time, duties that can be performed by a less costly employee. This particular package 101 would restore 4 evidence technicians, 5 trades maintenance workers, and 1 office specialist. The evidence technicians in this package are an expansion of the restoration thanks to the funding of the 10 positions by the E-Board, and it will greatly enhance our evidence management and at the same time return more sworn staff's time to their primary law enforcement duties. The 5 trades maintenance workers will maintain our vehicles and other equipment, as we've already discussed, tasks that are currently being coordinated by sworn staff, sergeants, lieutenants, in some cases the troopers. And again, this will restore that time and effort of our sworn staff to law enforcement duties. I'll move into policy option package 201. This position restores 139 trooper positions to address public safety and transportation safety issues by attempting to reduce crimes and crashes that cause injuries and deaths on the state highways of Oregon. This will be done through better visibility and through enhanced enforcement efforts. These 139 troopers will be deployed across the state, providing around-the-clock coverage on the major state and interstate transportation corridors in Oregon in an effort to save lives by making Oregon's highways safer, focusing on crash reduction, crime reduction, and motorist assistance. An implementation plan for the 139 trooper positions has been developed, and should this package be funded by the Oregon legislature, we would go with that implementation plan. If the number of trooper positions that are restored is different than what's in the governor's rec at 139, then we would modify that implementation plan. If you were to look in Addendum C under the patrol tab, it's got detail on the proposed implementation under the scenario of 139 new trooper positions.
Page 43, there is sort of a distribution by office of where the 139.
Okay. Let's see, 138 in Bend, and the rest of the state gets 1. Okay. I'm liking this. All right, Salem
you're
gets a half.
You're not on the I-5 course.
I think that's good. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What do we hope to accomplish with these 139 trooper positions? The desired outcomes and the indicators of our efforts as a result of the restored 139 positions are as followed. And there's more detailed information in your packet, but I'll touch on it briefly. Increased patrol availability, increased drug interdictions and other criminal interdictions, increased detection of impaired drivers, a reduction of hazardous driving behavior on the highways of Oregon, a reduction of motor vehicle crashes, and we would hope to see a reduction in the negative economic impacts on the transportation safety or transportation system in Oregon. And by that I mean if we have a crash that blocks the highway and it takes us longer than it should to get there, or it takes us longer to clear the crash than it should, then that backup of traffic has economic impacts, not just to citizens in their personal cars, but especially to commercial motor vehicles that are moving the commerce of Oregon up and down our highways. As mentioned earlier, we will be developing internal secondary performance measures to track our success and progress towards our goals of improved transportation safety and the reduction of criminal activity on state highways in Oregon. If you look at page 18 in your document, that has some more detail on the internal secondary measures that we will be developing to monitor our progress as a result of this restoration. As a result of the investment of additional trooper positions, the citizens of Oregon can expect the following. Establishment of a visible and consistent patrol presence providing services around the clock on the major transportation routes in Oregon. Fewer injury and fatal crashes. Fewer vehicles traveling at unsafe speeds. Safer construction zones. Fewer occurrences of impaired driving. Fewer crimes reported at the state rest areas. More patrol hours on our highways. And let me just touch on that briefly. The 139 positions would restore some slightly over 527,000 available patrol hours to the highways of Oregon. And finally, more criminal interdictions of narcotics, fugitives from justice, warrants, contraband, and the cash proceeds from the illegal drug trade. Another expected result from the restoration of the 139 positions is satisfied public regarding highway safety and the OSP patrol services. This would be done through the establishment of, as I mentioned, a visible and consistent patrol presence providing around-the-clock services, faster response times by OSP to our calls for service, more assistance to motorists who break down or are in need of assistance in the rural areas, fewer urgent calls for service that go unanswered each month, a reduction among the motoring public of the perception that Oregon's highways are unsafe, and a reduction of the motoring public the perception that crime in Oregon is worsening. Another...
Excuse me. Representative Hanna. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Captain Gregg, I let you get past this just faster than I got to it, but on the construction zone piece, are you aware currently, or does this budget reflect the number of overtime hours that your agency and the patrol division will be asked to participate in by ODOT?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, the budget does not reflect that. We are currently... in our areas of responsibility, meeting the requests from ODOT. However, there are some areas where we don't normally patrol, and we've opted worked with ODOT and asked them to let the local law enforcement agency handle those construction zones. The benefit would be that more troopers would be available to work in those construction zones, and by that. We'd spread those required patrol hours in a construction zone out over more people. Now, it may be my budget ignorance speaking here, but some of those overtime grant overtime dollars are probably contained in the other fund lines in the budget. And I see Mr. Wilson shaking his head. So.
Follow up, please. And Mr. Wilson, when you're ready, if you have a detail to this, I'd like to understand it. But in conversations that I've had with the director of ODOT, I've expressed a concern that here we've had a shortage of troopers, and yet ODOT continues to hold a pool of funding for construction zone or safety zone funded overtime, and that your agency puts patrol, fish and game, detective, crash scene investigators out working overtime hours to keep up with those zone coverages. Is that still correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, that is correct. We do everything we can to meet the request for enhanced enforcement in the safety zones, and if we have the right of first refusal with ODOT, if you will, and we're very candid with ODOT staff. If we can't meet those obligations and we can't provide adequate patrol presence in the construction zones, we're going to tell them, and they're going to give some of those requested hours of patrol to other agencies.
Comment then on this. This is a subject area that has kind of bothered me from some time. We got patrol folks out there already working overtime. We have another agency who consistently has budgeted funds for these hours and patrol. It's been my thought for some time that either the superintendent needs to request at the beginning of the budget cycle some number from that agency so that you can staff properly without putting these folks through all the overtime. And I understand there might be some incentive to work the overtime, and I don't want to quell some of that. But from a safety aspect, it seems to me we ought to have this number out there somewhere so we know how much we're going to be asked to put these folks out there and get them to commit up front to some of those dollars. And if the chair were here, Mr. Vice Chair, I just submit to you that this is an idea that I've put forward, and I think it has merit. And when we're talking about safety and how much we're asking these folks to plan ahead to have patrol and or other officers available, I'd sure like to see ODOT come forward with a plan that OSP could implement.
I'll bet you someone could help you write the letter.
Good comment. Any other questions at this juncture?
Another expected result that we would be looking at is satisfied key stakeholders regarding the level of service provided by the patrol division, primarily other members of the criminal justice system in Oregon. And we would accomplish that through increased ability to cover all of our calls for service, fewer calls for service that local law enforcement agencies would have to cover for the Oregon State Police, increased capacity to provide officer safety assistance to local police agencies, increased cooperative policing efforts directing at the most urgent public safety issues in local communities, and higher levels of support and customer satisfaction among Oregon police agencies and the district attorney's offices. Also expected is greater efficiency and support provided to the Oregon transportation infrastructure and the Oregon economic base through increased patrol areas within designated safety highway safety corridors, increased patrol hours within the construction zones, increased cooperative policing agreements with local law enforcement agencies, and a decrease in the negative annual economic impacts associated with each property injury and fatal auto crash and highway blockage in Oregon. In short, we come to work every day and try to save lives. We would like to be better positioned to work towards that goal, and we would like to have enough resources so that we can make a difference in the quality of life for the citizens of Oregon and the visitors to Oregon. Please keep in mind that the rebuilding of the department will be a long task. The actual impact and the measurable outputs and outcomes attributed with the restoration of 139 patrol troopers will not begin to be fully realized until June 2010, and this is due to the gradual phase-in of the restored positions throughout and during the course of the 07-09 biennium, and the fact that most of the newly hired troopers will not be on full solo patrol until 9 months after the date that they're hired. This will require a substantial commitment of time and effort to recruit, conduct background investigations, hire, and train the recruit troopers. It's a challenge that we embrace, and I am confident that we can successfully complete.
Mr. Gregg, do you know about how much longer your presentation?
I'm nearly finished.
Very good. Not trying to speed you along, but we've got some invited testimony as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'll talk briefly about Policy Option Package 208 and 309. 208, as the additional trooper positions are added and deployed across the state, Policy Option Package 208 would provide for additional support staff to support the additional troopers that are deployed in the field. That would be 2 office specialist twos, 2 evidence technicians, and 4 trades maintenance workers distributed throughout the state at the various offices. And finally, Policy Option Package 309. This package provides for the purchase and installation of 260 digital video cameras in our patrol vehicles. This is just one area, as I mentioned, where the Department of Troopers are out of step with industry standards. As I mentioned, nearly half of our fleet does not have video cameras in it. In closing, I want to emphasize that the men and women of the Oregon State Police perform their jobs each and every day with the goal of reducing death and injury crashes on Oregon's highways. Your support of the department will give these dedicated men and women the resources to be proactive in meeting this goal. We want you and your loved ones and all our Oregonians to be safe when traveling Oregon's highways, as well as safe in their communities, and we're committed to meeting that challenge, and thank you for the opportunity to provide. I thank you for the opportunity to provide your information.
Any questions for Captain Gregg? Excellent presentation, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. At this juncture, I'd like to call up invited testimony, I believe, obviously, in support of the patrol division, representative from the Oregon Chiefs of Police. Well, do you have something you want to say?
I was just going to introduce him, Mr. Chair, but...
Well, as long as you're calling up anyone but Sheriff Brown, we're good.
He's got a nice haircut, sir.
Be careful.
Mr. Chair, if I can have these gentlemen come up. They're definitely the 20 and over crowd. I think they've all got about 25 years experience in public safety, but... We got Chief David Nelson from Troutdale Police Department. He's also the president of the Chiefs Association this year. Down at the end here, you've got Sheriff Todd Anderson from Tillamook County. I think served most of his career over there on the coast. And then, of course, Sheriff Brown from Douglas County, who's started over on the coast, then came to Roseburg, and he's a sheriff down there.
Enter and sign in, please.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm David Nelson. I'm currently the chief of police in the city of Troutdale, and currently for about another 3 weeks, the president of OACP. I'll pass the baton on in April the 19th. I'd like to speak to you today in support of the Oregon State Police budget, primarily in three areas. First area is I understand that the proposed budget will increase the forensic scientist possibly up to 15 positions. I feel that these staff will dramatically increase police services to local agencies, municipal police departments, sheriff's offices throughout the state of Oregon. This is going to assist in the backlog of cases that they currently have, and probably more importantly, it will also speed up the cases that we're going to be sending to them in the future. Recent decisions coming down on speedy trials have been concerns to local jurisdictions, not getting cases to grand jury on time, and we've been having cases dismissed. Feel that having an adequate staff in the forensic science lab will help expedite these cases. The second area is that the increase in detective positions throughout the state police. They've had to reduce their participation in local jurisdictions in a variety of areas, whether it's narcotic enforcement, major crimes teams, and I believe that if they can add those personnel back to those jurisdictions, it will help in communications with those local agencies and provide assistance to agencies when the cases go across jurisdiction boundaries. Criminals don't know the boundary lines. They tend to go from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. It's difficult for some local jurisdictions to go from Tillamook County to Ontario to do follow-up. With the work of the state police, that can make assistance and transition a little bit easier. An example of an identity theft case that just recently happened, you may have heard about in the news today, is the identity theft from TJ Maxx. All of their data from their debit cards and credit cards were stolen. That is the largest data ID theft case in U.S. history. Those cases we don't have the support staff for in our jurisdictions to investigate that kind of a crime. That would fall on the shoulders of the Oregon State Police and/or their partners in the federal agencies. Primarily, the area I'd like to speak to today is the increase in the troopers. We very seldom see Oregon State troopers in the I-84 area. But I can't tell you how many troopers are even assigned to the Portland office right now. Very few. Primarily, they will work Highway 26, 205, and I-5. An example of this, again, yesterday, one trooper was up in the I-84 area and got into a pursuit along with the Multnomah County deputy. I sent two of my officers from Troutdale up to the Multnomah County, Hood County line to assist them with trying to apprehend two suspects. I believe that the increase in staff will support some of the areas that Captain Gregg was talking about. It'll reduce traffic fatalities. It'll increase DUI enforcement, traffic enforcement. If you look at the comparing state of Washington to the north, the number of troopers that they have on the roads is phenomenal compared to the state of Oregon. I can't drive up in the state of Washington at any time without seeing a half a dozen Washington state troopers. I could drive almost anywhere in Oregon and never see a state trooper. The coverage of 24/7 is important. Not so much in my area, but in the rural areas along the coast, southern Oregon, eastern Oregon. 24-hour coverage is extremely important, and I would support bringing the troopers back to get 24-hour coverage in areas such as Tillamook or Douglas County that don't have those areas covered right now. And from my research, it sounds like bringing these positions back will only bring them back to statuses of 2001, 2003 in the forensic science area, and back to the 90s in the patrol trooper area. And that still seems to be a little bit inadequate for the state of Oregon to be having that low number of troopers in the state. In closing, I have two comments in closing. One, in addition to my chief's position, I'm also represent the city of Sandy as a city councilor out there, and we support the budget for the state police. We do have a good working relationship with the state police in the city of Sandy. They use our police department to write reports, intoxicize you, a variety of things. So it is a huge asset to that community as well. And finally, I would just, with the new appointment of Tim McClain to the superintendent's position, I think that's an excellent decision. The Oregon Association Chiefs of Police fully support that decision, and we look forward to working with him to rebuild the Oregon State Police. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleagues. If you have any questions, I appreciate your time, and thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question. You mentioned a couple of examples to help us visualize the kind of help that it would provide. Do you have an example from your local area of sort of like real on the ground difference it makes to have additional evidence techs? And I'm not coming from the perspective of being doubtful. Just can you provide an interesting example where it makes a real difference in either the way the trial and court system works, or in solving crimes?
Well, I can, yes, ma'am. In the Multnomah County area, maybe a little bit different because of the volume of cases that go through, primarily with the Portland Police Bureau. There were certain crimes that were not even prosecuted because, whether we had evidence or not, because they didn't have enough staff to process the evidence. So there were certain cases that were just, there was a line that's kind of drawn. Property crimes weren't being prosecuted. You'd have to have person crimes to be prosecuted. The backlog going to grand jury was lengthy. So we would frequently end up having to just release people. And then we would get a court, an order back from the DA's office to go out and rearrest them on a warrant. It's a duplication of work. It's an increased time. And that doesn't need to happen. Does that kind of answer your question, ma'am?
That's it. Thank
okay, you.
You
bet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who wants to go? Who's more senior?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Todd Anderson, the sheriff of Tillamook County, and I'm also representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I'm here today to offer my support for the funding of the Oregon State Police budget. The Oregon State Police is a proud organization with a rich history of partnerships with the sheriffs of Oregon, city police agencies, as well as other local and federal law enforcement agencies. The Oregon State Police provides a variety of services that are imperative to local agencies for our survival. These services include backup on crimes in progress, investigative and technical support on complicated criminal investigations, forensic processing both on scene and at the crime lab. In addition, state police supports many of our smaller agencies, including mine, with SWAT services, accident reconstructionists, VIP protection details, as well as the MRT team, which is used in high-level protest or demonstration situations. And unfortunately, even in small little counties like Tillamook, we've been the subject of timber protest and had hundreds of people on the line. So without our partners, because we are so highly dependent on the state police, we wouldn't be able to function with many of these services. And that's not, of course, highlighting the patrol services, which I'll be talking about here shortly. The Tillamook County Sheriff's Office has a very special model with the Oregon State Police. We not only work the county area, but we share the same office. We have a shared reception area, a shared duty room, a shared locker room. My hallway is on the same hall as the state police fish and game sergeant, as well as the state police patrol sergeant. And I'd like to just give you one example of
how important the state police and their role to supporting a local agency is, especially to an agency like Tillamook County Sheriff's Office. And I have 27 deputies, including myself and the undersheriff, that actually do criminal law enforcement. And the investigation I'd like to talk about is the Morris family homicide. Back in December of 2002, the Tillamook County Sheriff's Office was called to the scene of a multiple family murder. Renee Morris, who was 7 months pregnant, along with her three children, Bryant, who was 10, Alexis, who was 8, and Jonathan, who was 4, were brutally murdered by their father and dumped in the Tillamook State Forest. From the time of the initial call, the state police was there as a partner agency. The Oregon State Police was on the crime scene with us, and shortly after we determined that foul play had occurred, the major crimes team was called out, which the Oregon State Police is a participant and a member. The Oregon State Police Crime Lab Forensics Unit responded, and they are the primary agency for most police agencies throughout the state in processing complicated crime scenes such as this one. The Crime Lab personnel helped to gather evidence on the scene, as well as we had a state police reconstructionist who was there who put the scene down, and so if we had to go back there on any given day with markers that we placed in there permanently, we could tell exactly where all the evidence was gathered, where our victims were found and discovered. These are assets that Tillamook County Sheriff's Office and many local agencies don't have the luxury of having. The Oregon State Police brought in a number of detectives, not just the one on our major crimes team, but they brought their criminal lieutenant down. He worked directly with us in concert in organizing the investigation. They helped us set up a data system, which not only took in the tips that came in from the public, but also allowed us to analyze the data, which tip was most significant, which one we should follow up on first. There was a two-week manhunt that ensued, and throughout that time, the Oregon State Police was partnering and stood by us throughout this investigation. The Oregon State Police actually was involved in the arrest of Edward Morris, the father, in Baker City. They were one of the support agencies with Baker PD that arrested Edward Morris. In addition to this, the van, which was the major crime scene involved in this crime, again was processed by the Oregon State Police. In addition to that, OSP Sergeant, who at the time had a broken leg, came in and interviewed Edward Morris until we could arrive in Baker City. And I must say that we arrived in Baker City in 2.5 hours because the state police was able to fly us there. And without the partnerships that we received in this case, we don't know how long this investigation would have gone on. As a result, Edward Morris was sentenced to 4 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. We've seen the Oregon State Police, and you talked a little bit about the Representative Nathanson about the evidence tech situation. I can give you a perfect example of that. In Tillamook, when I arrived in Tillamook County in 1985, we had 1 lieutenant, 2 sergeants, 2 criminal detectives, and 8 patrol troopers. Tillamook County now has 1 sergeant and 4 troopers for the entire county. We did not have an evidence tech for the past several years, and as a result, all the evidence that came into the state police had to be processed by the sergeant. Not only that, you know, you talk about the incoming evidence coming in, there's also the evidence that has to be purged after a case has gone through the court system and has been adjudicated. So I would often see that patrol sergeant who typically would be on the road 75% of the time sometimes have to spend 2 to 3 days a week of his work week in that evidence locker processing evidence when you know, he was unable to go out and enforce the traffic laws. You know, we've seen some significant impacts because of this. Also, the criminal detectives that went away, we had 1 on our narcotics team, and we had 1 that was a primary sex abuse and child abuse investigator. Since those positions have been eliminated, Now, with everything in Tillamook County as far as sex and child abuse outside the Tillamook city limits, because they have a officer does child abuse investigations, is handled by the sheriff's office. That used to be a shared mission between the two, the Oregon State Police and the sheriff's office. The state police used to be the primary responder for traffic crashes, DUI arrests. They by far outnumbered our DUI arrests. I was on the road in the mid-80s, actually, and worked with a number of troopers who were arresting 50 to 60 DUIs a year in Tillamook. Now the Oregon State Police is not the primary traffic enforcement agency in the county anymore. Tillamook County Sheriff's Office outside the incorporated cities as the primary investigator of most traffic crashes on state highways, as well as our DUI arrests are at least twice as what OSP is. Is this something that we have chosen to do? No, this is something that we have to do because it's been an unfunded mandate with the reduction of the state police on our highways. The ability and the backfilling of these 139 positions to the Oregon State Police with the troopers dispersed throughout the state is going to take workload off deputy sheriffs, off city police officers, and allow us to continue the criminal work, which is our primary impact. The office is, like I say, we feel very fortunate when a trooper's on duty. They can only do so much with the four troopers that they have in Tillamook now, and if one of them has a SWAT mission or one of them has vacation, you know, I've seen at times when on a weekend we had no night shift patrol on by the Oregon State Police at the time when drunk drivers were out. So I would say a couple of things in along with Chief Nelson that, you know, the Senate confirmed an incredible superintendent, Tim McClain, who the Sheriff's Association has an incredible amount of faith in. He's a relationship builder, and I believe that this committee can take a huge step by starting to refill those trooper positions and allow the superintendent to build the agency back up. Thank you.
Any questions? Ron.
Thank you, members of the committee. I'm honored to be here to advocate for what I think is a critical part of the Oregon public safety infrastructure. I'm Chris Brown. I'm the sheriff of Douglas County, and I'm also representing the Sheriff's Association. My fear is that when you look at the spreadsheets and the bottom lines, you could come away with the impression that the claims of OSP reductions are somewhat exaggerated. FTE counts and dollars could suggest otherwise. However, as you know better than anyone, OSP has become the default host for a number of extraneous responsibilities over the years. Those responsibilities, while a departure from OSP's core mission, add dollars and personnel that are reflected in OSP's budget. Some of this has been addressed through restructuring. However, you know, programs like Homeland Security, OEM, OWN in the future, and others tend to become predators on resources needed for the things that OSP exists to do. And those are things like patrol and forensics and investigations and criminal information, justice information. It seems sometimes like the police part of the Oregon State Police has almost been diluted to an incidental set of line items. And I would also like to preface my comments by saying that we have recently been granted a rare and unobstructed view of the future. In that, in recent weeks, the legislature has had to consider questions about things like how do we govern subordinate geopolitical jurisdictions that no longer exist? What happens when a county comes to you and turns in the keys and says we can't afford to be a county anymore? The safety net was introduced to buy time and to allow people to find solutions. Well, the safety net came and went, and there are no solutions. In the best-case scenario with the five-year extension, we'll have less time than we had the first time to find solutions. So this really isn't a discussion just about today's public safety issues. It's about the strategic reserve that we may find ourselves dependent upon tomorrow. As the sheriff and the chief said, when I arrived in Roseburg in 85, we had 30 troopers, and we had neighboring offices in Grants Pass and Cottage Grove.
With the recent add back of two, we have 9 troopers out of Roseburg, and the closest offices are Medford and Springfield. And I think while people compartmentalize this conversation and think that this is really exclusively about the state police, the fact is every trooper we lose means I've lost a deputy. The work doesn't go away because the troopers aren't there anymore. It's just the burden has shifted to us. And sadly, the burden is a little disproportionate, because the trooper at the 103 that stopped the speeding vehicle or did the truck inspection might very well mean that I don't have 4 deputies, ODOT, fire, and medical at the 105 on a fatal accident or a truck that's rolled over. A trooper who checks on the stranded teen motorist, my daughter, your daughter, might mean that I don't have to spend hundreds of hours doing a rape investigation or worse that happened because of this conspicuous absence of police presence on our highways. As was mentioned before by the Senator, as the bold, innovative efforts to address the meth issues in our states continue, it's important to remember that the threat is almost exclusively now on the highways, and that the drugs are just one of the myriad of threats that are on the highways, and threats have to be addressed on those highways. In my county, we do everything together. We train together. We've done policies together. We schedule to accommodate each other's specialized needs. And we are completely and 100% dependent upon one another. In a county that's a little bigger than Connecticut, if they aren't there, we start dropping the ball. There's too much to do, too much area, and too few resources available to do the job well. For some time now, we've been confronted with situations where we have competing urgent demands. We have to choose which bad call to go to first, and that's an imperfect process. And if the one we didn't choose to go to goes sideways, the people don't care why we weren't there. All they know are the consequences of the system that failed them miserably. The only hope we have is the support we receive from the people and the support we receive from you. Furthermore, as the flurry of meth-related legislation continues at both the state and the federal levels, the point I have tried to make for many months now is that while we will statutorily have an enviable toolbox, which is really, I think, achieved some remarkable successes in Oregon, there's nobody left to fight the fight. The task forces are collapsing around the state, and the loss of the safety net will mean many of the rest of them are gone. Never in the history of Oregon state history have the state police resources, in this case the investigative resources, been more important than they are right now. The other thing I wanted to talk about, which sometimes gets excluded, is LEDS, the Law Enforcement Data System. This is the cornerstone of daily policing activities in Oregon. They are the information lifeline within Oregon and across the nation. Because of their flawless performance, they tend to be overlooked. But if LEDS fails, the entire criminal justice system crashes. Almost everything that every police officer, every civilian employee does every day in every agency in Oregon requires LEDS to perform one or more services. 25 million law enforcement messages flow back and forth through LEDS every month. 32,000 law enforcement inquiries from other states flow through LEDS every month. The demand on LEDS is absolutely staggering, and the consequences for not meeting that demand are global and almost incomprehensible. With that awesome burden comes an equally awesome responsibility for the integrity of the system, the precision of the data that's in the system, audits of the users of the system, accommodating new technologies and predicting what the future needs for agencies with very disparate needs are going to be statewide. For years, LEDS has been struggling, and they are currently teetering on the edge of noncompliance with the mission-critical FBI data systems they facilitate our access to. Additionally, there are new tools on the horizon that will absolutely, literally, change the way we do criminal investigations. LEDS is the sole access point to those tools, and every law enforcement agency in Oregon will be reliant upon LEDS to ensure our access to those tools. LEDS is asking for a few positions that will help them fulfill the expectations of the agencies who administer the databases that we are completely dependent upon. And this will allow every police officer in Oregon to utilize the crime-fighting tools available to them. In my county, OSP is an instrumental component of the already faltering system. And, you know, the fact is, if the legislature doesn't help the state police this year in a very meaningful way, I can tell you with crystal clear precision that I can't keep the balls in the air anymore. And I just want to say this committee has always been attentive, and this committee has always made me feel welcome, and that makes me proud of my legislature, and I thank you. If there's any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Thank you, Sheriff. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you please talk just for a minute or so about what difference it makes if information, graphical information, let's say, as well as data, can be shared from a patrol car to some other command facility. For example, being able to get a photograph or a fingerprint or some other kind of image. We can't do that everywhere now.
No, you can't. It's absolutely
difference. Would it make?
It makes an enormous difference. It makes an enormous difference in patrol. Probably, as I said earlier, I mentioned there's a program that we've been working on, a few folks from around the country in the FBI, called the National Data Exchange Program, which will essentially link the records management systems of every agency in the country at every level of government. I can tell you that we just concluded an investigation that took us 20 years. In fact, the superintendent and I started that in 1988. And because of the inability to share information, to share photographs, to access records, because of all these different systems and technologies, it took us that long to put this thing together. Had we had the ability to share photos, to share reports more efficiently, we could have had that case concluded in a year or two. To any more, information is the name of the game. And, you know, if you have the information, you succeed, and if you don't, you won't.
Any additional questions for this distinguished panel?
I particularly appreciate your reference before I had to leave to the clerk's office. With regard to some of the forensic specialists, the criminal investigators in the labs. I mean, it's such a key component to everything you all do. So, anyway. Gentlemen, as always, exceptional testimony.
If you didn't tell them, we just want to say thank you for the work that you do. And particularly, we know that you and your staff and all put your lives on the line for the citizens of this state. I think sometimes people don't often appreciate that we know, even on patrol, that there's a lot of danger out there, and we just want to thank you for your work and for all that you do to keep us safe.
Thank you, Senator.
In those profound words, we are adjourned. Thanks, guys.